where we are going to deliberate and listen to a report from the National Department of Tourism on their actual performance on quarter two, and then give us highlights on quarter three, so that we are sure that the report that we'll be deliberating on and looking at would be the second quarter performance, and then for quarter three, we'll just be looking into your highlights of the performance, so that we are able to engage meaningfully with your second quarter performance, and then be able to give input and comment on the third quarter performance. With these few words, honourable members, allow me to welcome the department to our portfolio committee, the first portfolio committee meeting for the year 2019, and it might be also the last meeting for the fifth parliament, you know, because next week we'll be meeting their entity, and in a week's time, well, parliament has been dissolved already, you know, so we are now in that process of saying our goodbyes, gentle goodbye, and until we meet after the election. I would hand over to you. Hopefully, you know, we'll be meeting each other on the other side once we cross the river. I'll hand over to you, DG, to take us through.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member. If it so be that perhaps this becomes the last meeting, we would like to really extend our appreciation for the manner in which we have worked together. The committee doing its oversight work, and ourselves also ensuring that the public is duly informed by bringing transparent information before the committee. We will do the same today and ensure that we provide you with details about where exactly are we, why are we at that point, what can be done better, what has worked better. Quarter two, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, would be, in fact, the presentation is going to deal with both quarters as we go, so that we finish each of the branches one by one as we go. So you would have noted in the presentation that quarter two, our performance was at 86.67%. On slide 5, with the 6.67%, which we consider, we mark it yellow because it's significant work done that really was bordering on almost everything done, but there were a few things not yet completed, and of course we had that about 7% that was not necessarily completed. Quarter three, on slide 7, this is preliminary, so there is still going to be some processes, it's not yet audited by our internal auditors. We had 71% performance, 18%, which was significant work done, and 10% was not achieved for that particular quarter. We will then provide some of those reasons therein. Honorable Chairperson, one of the things I just want to share is that we have now come to a point where, amongst all of us, we do spend a lot more time outside the office, going to these sites where we're doing work, where we're having projects and so on, which gives us a little bit of a much deeper understanding of what is going on the ground. Of course, we've got project managers, they go to these sites regularly and so on. They give us reports, But we are actually going to these sites so that we've got in-depth understanding of what could be done better. Even during your activities between now and the sixth parliament, we would encourage that those communities living in those areas, you reach out to them, because when we reach out to them and they actually give us the feedback of why certain things have not necessarily moved, it's serious insight into the dynamics of working with communities. So you have a community, and that community has got three or four big villages in and around, and the different villages belong to different municipalities, both districts and as well as local. But they also belong to different senior chieftains, and all these dynamics then come into the project. So you've got to make peace with the different communities, and once you're busy doing that, demarcation comes in. So we have projects here that have got those types of dynamics. But when you go and you talk to each of them individually, they are all for the project. But they have to agree on how it's going to be rolled out. You've got a grand plan, but you've got to make sure that you convince everybody to be part of that particular process. So these are things that we are learning as we go into these communities, and we then begin to understand how best to re-engineer our system to be able to deal with those issues. I will give an opportunity to the first presenter, problem two, Madam Ella.
Thanks, DG. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I will go through Program 2, Tourism Research Policy and International Relations. Just to highlight that on slide 4, as DG mentioned, the quarter 2 performance, the actual performance for the branch, our achievement was 24 out of 26 targets, 92%, with two targets not fully achieved. One that was that for which we have done significant work, and one which we have not achieved. If we then move to slide 6, which is the preliminary performance for quarter 3, the performance is very similar in the sense that there are two targets that we not fully achieved, one not achieved and one significant work being done. I will then move to slide 10 that speaks to the targets, the quarter 2 and quarter 3 targets. On slide 10, we targeted to do two tourism facilitation initiatives, and we targeted specifically analysis of airlift in this case, and we are doing this, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, to equip us with knowledge and information when we engage with our stakeholders. We sit on a number of forums and platforms where airlift is being discussed, and it's important for us to have the background. So we have targeted different areas, different regions. So in quarter 1 we did Asia, and quarter 2 we did Africa and South America, and then quarter 3 we targeted Europe. So every quarter we target a different region, and we do the analysis to inform our engagement when we engage with relevant stakeholders. There are a couple of cities that now also have within provinces that set up an airlift air strategy committees, and we are also participating in those. On slide 11, it's a similar process, but it speaks to visa specifically. Quarter 1 we worked on Asia and North America, and quarter 2 on Africa. Quarter three is on Europe, but this kind of work then also inform us when we engage with the Department of Home Affairs in rolling out, amongst others, the stimulus package that the Minister of Home Affairs announced last, or the response that the actions that the Minister of Home Affairs announced last year in response to the President's stimulus package. So those two are on track, and we aim to deliver as planned by the end of the year. On slide 12, it's our dissemination platforms, and in this APP we have targeted two. One being our public lecture that we host, and the other one our research seminar. The public lecture was indeed hosted in September in Mthatha. We have delivered what we planned for quarter two, and quarter three is on target. With regard to the research seminar, we have delivered what we planned for in quarter two and quarter three, and the seminar is planned for March this year. So in both of these, we are also on track to deliver. On slide 13, it speaks to the first of the 22 reports that we develop on monitoring and evaluation. And in the quarter two, we have drafted the NTSS implementation report. And then in quarter three, the consultation was done. So we are on track, just to say that the National Tourism Stakeholders Forum is still overseeing the implementation of the NTSS with five different work streams focusing on the different pillars of the NTSS, so that we make sure that we advance the implementation of the NTSS. On slide 14, it speaks to two further reports. The one is the development of the State of Tourism Report for 2017-18, and the two quarters under review we have delivered as planned, and we are on track to deliver the annual target. We then quarterly also develop what we call a fact sheet. We are, and that we have done for a tourism fact sheet, and that we have done for both quarters. On slide 15, we have a monthly report on the tourist arrivals. As soon as StatsSA published the figures, that's published December figures 2 days ago. We do an analysis of the figures and that we have done for the months under review. And then the first report speaks to the capacity building projects that we are doing monitoring over. So in quarter two, we developed the monitoring tools, and the plan was also finalized in quarter two. So for this, we've included there the notes that we are doing the monitoring for. Quarter two was also on track, so we are on track to deliver on this target for the year. And then on slide 16, the impact evaluation on the departmental capacity building program. Chair and honourable members, this is one of the targets that's not fully on track. And the reason for that is that we had a non-response on the bid, so we really struggled to appoint a service provider from the start. When we planned this project, we said that we do not have internal capacity to do the evaluation, and it also a good idea, we feel, to have independent someone to look at to do the evaluation. We really struggled to get a suitable service provider, We managed to get one now, but in the period under review, we've done everything. We did the data collection tools ourselves, but the data collection did not start as planned, and that's what's behind schedule for this one. We are catching up. We are working very hard to also reach this target for the year. Then on slide 18, then on slide 19, it's the annual report on the bilateral agreements that we have signed with countries abroad, and we do provide a quarterly report on what we have done. In relation to, in response to the prioritized MOUs for the year. And those reports were developed. On slide 20, it speaks to the National Tourism Information Management System. The first target speaks to the design of the system. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, you might recall that with the information system, there are, in essence, three things that's happening together at once. The one is the design of the system. The second one is the collection of the data that will go into the system. And the third one is the development of the regulations to empower us to do that. So with regard to the system, we are on track for the system to be developed. And that includes the different databases. Where we are behind is this with the starting of the data collection. We have recruited the youth. We have done a number of things as highlighted there in the slides. We've put all of them through security clearance. We've worked with the municipalities. The outstanding item is that for six provinces, we were not able to get suitable service providers to manage the projects. So we, for the third time, I think, put out a bid to get suitable service providers, and we are very hopeful that we will have that. But apart from that, those service providers will manage the project in terms of payments and so forth. Apart from that hurdle, we are on track with this project. So we are really pushing to get the right people employed to manage the outstanding six provinces. Then on slide 22, so those are the two items, honourable members, that we are behind. The one is on the evaluation program or project. And the other one is on the collection, the start of the collection of data. Although we do, the collection of data will start in this financial year, but it might not start in all the provinces as we hoped, but we are still pushing. On slide 22, it speaks to the multilateral fora, and there were five initiatives around that. We hosted the Indian Ocean Rim Association workshop on coastal and marine tourism on the margins of Indaba last year, and we developed the report of that workshop in quarter two. And the ministerial expert meeting was also hosted, and a report was developed. So we are on track with those initiatives. The sharing of best practices workshop is our annual workshop. We were on track in quarter two and three, and the workshop was subsequently held in this month. On slide 24 is the Indaba ministerial session, and this is where we started with the plan for the Indaba ministerial session in 2019 that we envisaged. We have all the targets were met for quarter two and three. although honourable members, with the shifting of the dates of Indaba, it seems likely that there won't be a ministerial session this year because of the shifting of the dates. But we are ready should there be a session. Then on the slide number 25, that speaks to the data collection, honourable members, that I spoke about, one of the projects that we are behind. We did appoint, as I mentioned, two service providers that will manage the collection in Eastern Cape, Free State and Northern Cape. And we did publish the regulations and we are incorporating the comments and we did recruit the 419 youth at that stage. We have a bit more now. We are still pushing for 600. We really hope to have signed contracts with 600 by the end of the financial year. What is impacting on this slightly is that the aim for us is to recruit the youth from the area that they will be working. And in some areas it's a bit more difficult than in others, but we are pushing for delivery there as well. I think that then on slide 26 continues with that program. We are currently in the trainer program, so data collection will definitely start. Honourable members, it's just we trust that we will get the other project management companies on board. Those are all the deliverables for program 2. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I will take you through the Destination Development Report. It's contained on slides 29 to 39. We have 15 targets for this year, and of the 15 targets, 10 are on track. 4 of them, there's been significant work done, and 1 is actually significantly behind. So slide 29 speaks to our precinct concept. Am I in the right slide? That slide. Thank you, number. Are the numbers different? 28, okay. Facilitation sessions. I see. Thank you, sorry. This is me. I look a bit still asleep. Apologies. So we start on slide 28, which actually looks to the facilitation sessions that we are holding in provinces. The outcome of this work is really to assist provinces to plan for a destination within that province. And this work is actually very well on track. In fact, there has been requests for us to hold more than 2 sets of facilitation sessions because there's real value that provinces and local authorities see from this. So where it is possible, we are trying to assist with more sessions, but from the perspective of our target, it actually is on track. The next one, similarly, is about developing precinct plans in Khayelitsha and for the Karoo. And the stakeholder consultation was really what we had as our target for quarter 3. This work is similarly on track, and we are also getting very good feedback from our stakeholders saying that this actually does add value to the work that they're doing. Slide 30 talks to the 4 master plans that we are working on. Related to Sutherland and to Carnarvon, Hondabay, to Pondit Klipbaai, to Port Nullarbor, Port St. John's to Coffee Bay, and then the Orange River Mouth. In that quarter three, we were really looking at stakeholder consultations around the frameworks that were developed. So that work is also progressing well with no challenges at this point in time. Slide 31 talks to the precinct development concepts for Plain Sea Beach and for Honda Clip 5 to McDougall's Bay. And similarly, that work is progressing without any real challenges at all. The next one speaks to our pipeline of investment projects. And the actual target is a report. What the report actually contains is all of the work that we've been doing with stakeholders. governments at the provincial and local government level to prepare projects for the platforms that we actually showcase them on. The report then also talks to the work that we've been doing with different investors to profile these projects and to actually get funding for them to happen. So that's really what the outcome of that work is to actually actively progress tourism projects from concept all the way through to delivery. And that work is similarly on track. So in the last quarter, there's been a lot of work with our DFIs around funding specific projects and getting feasibility work underway and showcasing those on platforms. Slide 32 then speaks to the ownership and operational model for budget resorts. On this slide, we have had a delay in the appointment of a service provider, and that was necessitated by us actually looking at the information coming to us from what's on the ground. So initially, we had conceptualized budget resorts to really only look at state-owned properties. But I think through the work that we've been doing on assessing the projects that we've developed now through our Working for Tourism project, which are in fact community-owned projects, there is actually a need to broaden that idea of what budget resorts can be. So they are state-owned facilities and they are also actually community-owned facilities. And in doing that, we broaden the scope of the work that we actually are doing in this to accommodate that. Although this target was actually delayed for quarter three, the annual target is on track for delivery. So we're not anticipating any problems with this. We are, in fact, expecting the final report on the 20th of March, according to the project plan. Slide 33 then talks about the projects that the DG alluded to, Shangoni Gate and Palaboa. We have had very severe delays in the approval of the EIA processes for Shangoni Gate. And it is precisely for the reasons of consultations with the community that that has actually resulted in the delays. So it's really about the location of the gate. So the EIA was put in, and then in the appeal process, there needed to be a lot of facilitation with the two communities that are closest to the gate. But it resulted in a very significant delay in the process. I think it took 237 days for the EIA process to be concluded, with very good reason, because in the public consultation process, there was a lot of discussions with the two communities that are closest to the gate about where it would be located. And in trying to accommodate the various views and in trying to actually mitigate the concerns that both communities raised, it did take a lot of time. The time was well spent, though, because it has meant now that where the gate is finally going to be located has the approval of both sets of communities and the support of it. But this is not necessarily something that could have been anticipated in the planning of the project. It's a really long time. It's almost a year, roughly, in an EIA process. And in the statutory process, an EIA with all of its appeal processes, et cetera, should take about 6 months. So that is really what has resulted in the delay, because it has had knock-on effects. You can't design the gates until you know where it's going to be located, because you have to take into account the site location in actually designing it. And then I think also internally, the DG has met with the CEO of Sandparks. Sandparks has also explained to us that at the point that they were about to make the appointment of the architect to do this work, there was one candidate that was the successful one and only one that they could appoint. And at the very last second, that candidate then withdrew. So they had to actually re-advertise their process. For the architect. Palaboa, I think, is similar challenges with Palaboa, although it's not really at the point of being completed at this point in time. So that speaks to that target, and this target, the annual target, will not be met, given the knock-on effect of all of those delays. The UA projects, which are contained on slide 34, this is really now working in various destinations to actually create municipal facilities. The target is actually having detailed plans. The concept report, in fact, was completed, and this target is really on track for delivery. We're not concerned about the annual target at all. This Dinosaur Interpretation Center, which is then on slide 35, is currently under construction, and we have at this point an estimated completion date of February 2020. So the construction is on track and there are no challenges with the Dinosaur Interpretation Center. Similarly, the Leopard Trail and the Interpretation Center work at Bavianskloof in the World Heritage Site, the Cape Coral Kingdom, is similarly on track and there were no challenges with delivery for quarter three. Interpretative signage also on track in these six sites and no challenges experienced with the work. The next deliverable, which is related to the Indo-Atlantic route, is actually related to consultation on the implementation plans. Now, there are two actual issues that have impacted a little bit on the delivery here. In this specific one, we, despite, I think, repeated follow-ups with the province was not available in the Northern Cape to meet with us. So consultations happened with all of the other provinces, but in the Northern Cape, we were unable to meet with the stakeholders in that particular quarter. We have, in fact, now met with them, and there are no challenges with the annual delivery of this target. The next target is also related to the Indo-Atlantic route. So what happened was that we now have a very comprehensive study on all of the supply and on what we are envisaging is the demand along the entire coastline. But in order to do that study, we actually delayed the finalization of the study. It was initially anticipated to be completed by October last year. We thought it was wise to actually extend the consultation period because the report is almost just over 300 pages. In order to give our stakeholders sufficient time to read through it and to make input on the report, so we finalized the study at the end of December, and that meant that the work that we were going to actually do, which was actually signing MOUs on work coming out of the study, was delayed until the study was delayed. So we have our draft MOUs in place based on the projects that we're going to work on in various provinces, but the signing of the MOU was delayed until we actually finalized the scope of work. There is no concern about us being able to achieve the annual targets on this one either. The next one then is the full-time equivalence, and on this target, I think that we have been concerned about its delivery quarter two and quarter three. I think firstly we must say that the target of 6355 full-time equivalents was our stretch target. It's the highest target we've ever put into our actual APP. It was based on the time on projects that were already in implementation. So the number is based on what was already in implementation. And then it was based on projects that we knew were going into actual procurement. DDG Milan has already spoken to one of the projects, which is the data monitor project, which involves 600 FTEs. And the challenge with that project is that we had to re-advertise the tender three times, because the first two times we actually didn't get tenders that were responsive to the scope of work. So we didn't really anticipate that it would have to be re-advertised three times, and that meant that that target around 600, which we had put into our initial planning, couldn't be met. The second project then that has affected the achievement of FTEs, which DDG Rampele will speak to, is the food safety project. I think that was roughly 1,200. 1.5 FTEs, 1,500 FTEs. And so we've also had in that project challenges around procurement and around the responses that have been received. and were therefore unable to make the appointment in order to actually meet the target. So this target, I think that we are, although it is a stretch target, it is something that we are still working really hard on trying to meet. We have a number of other projects which we hadn't had in our original plan that we are trying to move forward, but it is very likely that the actual annual target will not be achieved in this financial year.
Good morning, Chairman and Honourable Members. I'm going to present on the tourism sector support services. It has 33 targets for the quota 2. Out of the 33, 27 were achieved, 3 significant work done, 3 again were not achieved. In quota 3, it's 34 targets, 21 were achieved, 6 significant work done, and 7 were not achieved. The first target is on the monitoring of the implementation of the amended tourism triple BEE sector code, which is an annual survey that we do in order to assess the performance of on transformation within the sector. In quarter 2, we expected to collect data of the amended tourism triple BEE sector code, which should have started. And in quarter 3, we expected to have come up with the report. Unfortunately, due to the low response rate coming from the sector, we are not able to finalize the data collection. We have expanded the period, and this month we'll be able to have received the data, and the target will be met by the end of March. The report will be available. The second one is on giving support secretariat services to the Charter Council, Triple BEE Charter Council. We're able to do one council quarterly meeting, which we're able to facilitate in the third quarter as well as in the second quarter. The other target in terms of the three initiatives supported to promote Triple BEE implementation was on the issue of women in tourism empowerment initiatives. In the second quarter, we expected to create awareness sessions on empowerment opportunities, which we were not able to do, but instead we were able to come up with various provincial women in tourism launches, which in them, as we launched them, we were able to share with them the opportunities that they had. We were able to do that in Western Cape, in Mpumalanga, in August as well as in September. And the third quarterly target was on the conference that we annually hold for women, which was supposed to have been held in December, but due to the Deputy Minister's calendar, we had to defer it to January. We were able to hold that on the 23rd and 24th of January this year in Northwest. The following target on the domestic tourism strategy. We're expected to come up with a framework that would guide on how to support tour operators so that we facilitate domestic travel. Two information workshops were held for the finalization of the very framework in quarter 2, and the sessions were held in KZN and Northwest as well as in Mpumalanga. In the third quarter, we expected to pilot the scheme for domestic tourism in one node and in one township. What we managed to do here was that we could not do that in terms of piloting one scheme in one node and the other in a township. But as we speak now, we're able to do the piloting of the scheme utilizing the Marula Festival in Palaboro as well as the Mutani in the KZN. When we were supposed to do the Township 1, which includes the Inanda route, which involved some of the students within the TVET College, there was a strike that was last week, but that one will be done before the end of March, meaning we'll be able to meet the target related to piloting the scheme within the township. In terms of the TOS for designated group supporters, for quarter two, we were able to do the youth summit, which was hosted here in Parliament on the 11th of July, and the youth participated. In total, the number was 320. But before this final event, we were able to do provincial sessions in order to culminate into the final session. In quarter three, the target was to do one event which we must support related to the designated groups. We were able to do four chores for designated groups, one in Limpopo on the 6th and 7th of December, where we took 70 people within the Kruger Park and surrounds. The other one was in Northwest in November, where we were able to take 100 people around Bilansbeck National Park and Sun City and the surrounds. The other one was on the Panorama Route in Mpumalanga, where also we took 100 people within that route and surrounds. And the last one was in Gauteng, where we focus on people with disabilities, in this instance focusing on those who have cerebral palsy. And this was done in November, and 80 people were taken in that tour. So as we end the year, we achieve this finally. The next is on the number of enterprises supported for development. The annual target is to support 400 SMMEs. In quarter two, we're able to do 277 enterprises through the what we call the Empress Track, which is a business management training in partnership with CEDA. This was done. What we need to take note is that the 400 is a cumulative figure. But in the third quarter, we only managed to do, which is an addition to the 277, amounting to 370, of which we were able to support them online financial businesses. But we have split the 93, which we were able to give business advisory services to 25, business management training through the Empower Track that I've referred to, which was 41, and then awareness information sharing services, 27. These are the workshops where we literally take through the businesses in terms of how to do the applications for the various funding that are out there, including our own. The following is still on the 400 SMMEs in terms of the annual target. Here, we're expected to do a needs analysis of the 400, which was done. It's a question of once the needs are identified, the intervention plans in terms of taking through those who have been identified. If they don't pitch up for the training program, it has a tendency of the numbers not being enough. Hence, we are saying in order to correct this, the 30 SMEs who should be doing making up the 400 will have to focus on them in the last quarter. And we are confident that we'll be able to reach that 400. On the incubators, we're expected to support the existing incubators in quarter two, which we have done. And we have an incubator that is now running in its third year, which is the one in Bilansbeck. The other three that are in as existing, that is Mir, Palabora, and Manyaneti, we have done the support internally. person for the incubator to run, we need to have a service provider who should be able to handhold the incubator going forward. We're not able to do that, but at the end of the financial year, we would have managed to get the service providers to support these three existing incubators. In terms of the selection of the 100 beneficiaries as the in the incubator, we managed to get the 50 for Palabra in the first quarter. We have had it actually right from the beginning. But with the meal, it was a little bit of a struggle in the first quarter. They have not yet reached 50. But as we speak now, we have managed to get 50 beneficiaries within the value chain of tourism. And as they get a service provider to handle them, it will be something that will be done fully in the next financial year. I've already spoken to the analysis of the 100 incubators that is within the MIR and the Palabra. As soon as we have the service providers, they will be able to sit properly now with the beneficiaries in terms of what is it that they would like to be capacitated on going forward. That would also inform the type of business typology within the very incubator going forward. For the three coming years, what are the things that they would really want to be supported on? And the delay in terms of making sure that we get the service provided, that we have a panel which consisted of only six service providers, and already there were work that they were doing. So it was prudent that we expand that panel so that we're able to get more service providers within that panel. We're able to do that. We have plus minus 40 service providers now on the panel. So it will make our work quite easier going forward in terms of assigning work. We didn't want to run the risk of giving a lot of work to only the six when we knew already that they were doing some work for us. In terms of the incentive program, we have four incentive projects that are running under this. The first one being the market access. In quarter two, we were able to have 55 applications which were approved. And in quarter three, applications which were approved were 37. And we have indicated the very trade platforms where these businesses have managed to go and market their businesses, which is the International Tourism Sponsor, that is ITB in Berlin, as well as the Moscow International Travel and Tourism, MITT, which is normally held in March, as well as the East Mediterranean International Tourism and Travel Expo, which normally is held in February. Under the grading program, in quarter two, we were able to approve 526 businesses, that is, which received discounts for them after they have graded. And in quarter three, we have approved 522 enterprises. On the Green Tourism Incentive Program, for quarter two, four projects were approved for funding, and then in quarter three, again, four projects were approved for funding. For the transformation, Tourism Transformation Fund, in quarter two, three projects were approved, and then in quarter three, two projects were approved for funding. I do have the names of where these businesses are in terms of the transformation fund as well as the green tourism fund, as well as the pipeline of how many do we have that are still to be considered. On the number of community tourism enterprises supported to enter the tourism value chain, we were able to have the feasibility studies of the five communities that are identified as the annual target. when we received the feasibility studies, they were able to indicate to us what type of projects we need to run at what cost. And what we have done thus far is to prioritize those projects that are within our realm or our space in terms of the mandate. And the ones that we found will be feasible is to support these communities in terms of the homestay, as most of them have indicated that the homestay program will be able to help them really benefit within the tourism value chain. We're able also to do an additional 5 feasibility studies during that time, and the places are indicated there. What we need to do, because some of this fall within other departments, is to have an interaction with our sister departments, especially the Department of Rural Development, to see how can we move forward in dealing with some of the areas that are not within the mandate of choice. We have the report on these feasibility studies, which we can be able to share with the committee. On the application of the service excellence standards, that is SANS 1197, we are expected to support 3 visitor information centers located in the nodes that we have agreed on. In quarter 2, the implementation of the standards in terms of the need identification were done in the 3, and we have a report regarding that. In quarter 3, we're also expected to come up with a matrix in terms of capacity building of the 3. We're able to do those. In terms of still on the other areas identified, located in the signals, that is the St. Lucia, that is the Kula, as well as the Port St. John's and the Landsberg. We had to replace St. Lucia, that is Kula Information Center, as well as the Port St. John's. In Kula, the province were busy doing the renovations and couldn't implement the service excellence training modules. Unfortunately, with the Port St. John's, the visa information got destroyed by fire. And these were replaced by Bilansberg National Park in the northwest, as well as the Kimberley, replaced by the Kimberley and the Western Development Agency information centers. These are the ones that replaced the 2, which we couldn't support. But it would be easy now to go back to the cooler one to give them the service that we indicated that we'll be able to support them with. Still on the initiatives related to visitor services, the journey to service excellence, the program in 2 municipalities as part of the small town revitalization, we were able to implement it in Jozini, as well as the Port St. John's. And the capacity building was done in both areas. And in Jozini, it was on the 8th and the 28th November 2018, and the Port St. John's was on the 30th October, the 5th and the 6th November 2018. In dealing with complaints from tourists, the annual target is to deal with those complaints, all of them, that is 100%. There's a report indicating the number of complaints that we received, which were 12 in quarter 2, and the 9 were from the domestic tourists, and the 3 were from the international tourists. There's a progress report on this, and in quarter 3, also progress report indicating the types of complaints received, which in number they were 18, 10 which were from locally, and the 8 were from international. There are graphs that indicate the complaints in terms of percentages as well as the nature or the types of complaints received. We can go to slide, I think it's slide, I can't see it properly, 65, my eyes are failing. On this one, still is on the issue of the complaints. We're expected to come up with a framework for accreditation of tourism schemes as an annual package in line with what is coming out of the Tourism Act. We did consultations on the draft framework with the following stakeholders: the Consumer Protection Forum, the FEDHASA, the Department of Economic Development in the Free State. We have a Tourism Complaints Management Forum, TBCFA, SAT, as well as the South African Police, the Complaints Division, so that they're able to input into their framework. We've consolidated the inputs received, and we will be able to make sure that by the end of the year, we know which format to take regarding the accreditation. The following one is on the awareness that we said we'll do. Three joint awareness campaigns implemented for complaints, implemented for service excellence as well as service guiding. In quarter two, we're able to do a joint awareness campaign with the police as well as the metro police within Joburg as well as Ekurhuleni in OR. And in quarter three, we did a one joint awareness campaign in Sun City, Bilansberg. We're also checking the people who guide illegally. We're able to do those awareness campaigns. On the number of tourism monitors, 1,450 annually, we're able to, in quarter three, to have started implementing this in six provinces. As we speak, only three provinces are outstanding, that is the Western Cape, Northwest, and Free State. Procurement for the service provider already gone. This is a partnership that we are doing with DIA. Some parks already also have come on board, and Sunby, which is which deals with our botanical garden, also will be part of this exercise. We'll be able to achieve and maybe even exceed the figure that is indicated. On the training program, we have the chefs program, which we are continuing to do as indicated there. We also have the NHYP hospitality program, which has been indicated throughout the year. We have the variance in terms of the figures that we said we'll do, and mainly these are due to the dropout that we have, loss of interest, issues of young people getting permanent employment, illness, pregnancy, and basically people not really feeling that it's a space for them to can be within the sector that's going to other areas. We also have the familiar training, which we have done over the years. We had 12 dropouts coming out of this one. On the food safety that is indicated now, the issue related to the procurement not being reaching finality due to the various reasons. I've already referred to the hospitality youth program. And the NTCE, which we held in the third quarter in Northwest, is done. And the training of 40 women in the executive development, the partnership that we have with UNISA. They will be graduating in April. Already have taken in another cohort for the next financial year. They've been achieved. The one on the capacitating tourist guide, we're supposed to upskill tourist guides in the Cape Forest. Unfortunately, this one is Cape Nature. Due to the fires that have been happening in the province, they have just indicated that it's not going to be easy for them to go into the province, which means we won't be able to achieve, but only for the Cape Forest. With the others, we will be able to achieve the target. Still on the upskilling of the tour guide. On resource efficiency, the training program was in 3 provinces. We have managed to achieve the quarter 2 target as well as the quarter 3 target. Actually, as we speak, they have started to graduate. We have started with the graduation from last week. And the last one is on the local government and capacity building. Basically, the quarter 2 referred to information sharing sessions, which we were able to conduct in the Eastern Cape in the second quarter. In the third quarter, it's on also continuing to share the information, and we have indicated that we have done that in DR, in the 6-week assignment, as well as in Kuruma. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. On quarter 2 for corporate management, out of the 17 targets, there's one we're not able to achieve, and I'll speak to it. And then in quarter 3, we had 15 targets, 4 of which we were not able to achieve, but significant work was done there. Going to slide 81, which speaks to our strategic documents. The APP for 2019-20, the annual performance report for 2017-18, and the 4 quarterly reports on the implementation of our strategic plan and APP were developed and submitted as required. The quarterly risk reports were also presented to the Risk Management Committee, and as well as the SAT quarterly oversight reports were also developed and provided to the minister. On the next slide, which is 82, in quarter 2 we met our target. Our vacancy rate was at 7.4%. However, in quarter 3 we didn't meet the target.
My proposal is that we, for this particular program, we focus a lot more on the things we didn't achieve. I'm just worried that it's already 1.5. We may end up giving a report that we will not have an opportunity to give it up.
So on quarter 3, our vacancy rate went up to 8.3%, and it's to do with the fact that we haven't been able to fill our posts due to the ceiling on our compensation budget. This has required us to find ways of ensuring that those functions are still carried out. That includes, you know, outsourcing some of our critical functions and using internal lateral functions, all in an effort to ensure that we meet the capacity gaps there. And then just moving on to the next slide, 84. I'll skip 83 because we have the target there. In 84, to do with the implementation of the workplace skills plan. Target met in quarter 2, but in quarter 3, we stood at 15% of implementation versus 25%. Again, there is to do with lack of funds, the limits on our budget. This meant that we were not able to award bursaries and internships, new bursaries and internships for 2019-20. However, we still continued to award the previously approved bursaries.
Moving on to slide 86, which speaks to the implementation of our ICT strategic plan. In quarter two, we were not able to submit the strategic plan for approval. It was drafted. However, because of the work that we're doing in revising our strategic plan, we're to delay that process so that we're able to align the ICT plan to the department's strategic objectives. We are hopeful, though, and that we'll be able to make that to get approval in quarter four. And in quarter three, we were not able to. Our deliverables there stood at 76%. The portion we're not able to deliver on has to do with the appointment of a service provider to support us with the upgrade of our electronic document management system. The service provider that had been qualified, we discovered that there were further documents that we required from them, and they were not able to provide us. That required us to then go back to the drawing board and re-advertise. But we're confident that we'll meet the target at the end of the financial year. And then the last one that we're not able to fully meet is in slide 88 with regards to implementation of the communication strategy. In quarter three, we stood at 91.7% of implementation, and that's because we were not able to host two ministerial izimbizo due to scheduling challenges. Members may recall that our minister had to stand in at the Department of Environment, as Environmental Affairs, when the former minister passed on. So that had a big impact on our ability to host the izimbizo. We are still hopeful that we'll meet the target. We're supposed to hold an visa last week, but due to service delivery protests, we couldn't proceed. But we're still flagging on and hoping that we'll meet that target. I think that's the last one. Thanks. Honorable members.
Thank you, Chair, members. I'm just going to deal with the finances on slide 94. From a presentation, you could see that our spending up to the 31st of December was 76%. The administration program spent 69%. Tourism Research Policy International Relations 91%. The reason for the high spending and the, this program is the SA Tourism, our public entity transfer payment that is included in this program, and we have paid the majority of the funds over to SA Tourism. The last payment for SA Tourism was paid in the fourth quarter. Destination development 47%, and then tourism sector support services 60%. You can see that the percentages of the spending talks to the performance as discussed by the DGs. And if you look at the next slide on page 95, it's the same figures, it's just in the, reflected per economic classification, where we presented in the current payments, transfer payments, capital assets, and then payment for financial assets. But the spending, as I said, is 76%. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think we overall will still be able to achieve a lot more of the things that we have reported in that we were not able to achieve. There are different types of problems that we've encountered. We've encountered problems with regards to procurement, particularly when it comes to either the responses coming from the market are not in line with what we require, or cases where I do know for one case, which I'm not unfortunately able to give details at all because we have not concluded on it. If I speak about it in detail on record here, it will create problems for us. But it has been doing to and fro internally. And ultimately, I'm waiting for decisions that will then come from the internal bodies that are responsible for those decisions. And when you look at it, you realize that it's going to be a perpetual problem. You've got a specification, you've got an evaluation, and between the specification and the evaluation, then when it goes to the adjudication, something is happening within that particular environment. So those are some of the issues that we've got to deal with. But you can't foresee them. So there will be human elements. You will deal with the consequences, but you can't foresee them. We are sitting now with a contract where we had a disciplinary process internally. And in that particular disciplinary process, which involved the senior manager, the person has resigned before that conclusion of the process. We will still give you that detailed information, but I'm not going to mention the names and so on. But that has got direct implication for the contract, and the work is already underway. So we are seeking a legal advice on what do we do with that particular contract. And it could go either way. So in the end, it will have direct impact on the service delivery, because we'll have to go back again and so on. So if all these things, they kind of like come together. One of the things that Shamila was talking about, which relates to Palawarra Gate, when we thought now everything is done, we are going to get the EIA, something pops. They find some small little wetland, very, very small. And then the feedback comes in to say, you've got to look at that thing. They look at this thing. Just when they thought it's done, then there's a sewage spill that goes straight to that site. And it's got nothing to do with the project. It's got everything to do with the surrounding area. So these are things that would always come in when we are not necessarily aware of them or could even anticipate or foresee. But nonetheless, we've got to manage them as we go. Thank you.
Honourable members, the presentation is this morning. I would like to note you to be able to engage with the two performance reports with a show of hands. Honourable Masihela.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me appreciate the presentation that we got, which is probably maybe the very nice one as you said. As they were presenting, I've realized that several problems that they had was it was because of maybe not getting suitable service providers and so on. Several of them are talking about service providers. So I want to know, what is your plan going forward on the issue of the service providers? What is happening? Are you not advertising them so that you can get the service providers, you know, coming forward for the different activities that you need? So I just want to know, what is your way forward on that? Maybe it will assist the sixth parliament when it gets in. Yes. The other issue is about, I thought I lost my pages here. Okay. You said executive development program being, who are, have been trained already. And then you also indicated that you have got the next income coming in, but I don't know how many are they for the ones that are coming in. If you can fill us up on that one. The last one is on slide 94, where it talks about destination development. We managed to get 47%, 36%, and it deals with expanded public public works programs. I'm a bit worried on this one because this is the project that assists in making sure that we provide work opportunities for the many people out there who are unemployed. And for the 5 years that we have been talking about it, it seems we are not making any inroad. What strategies are we going to have in place from now onwards to ensure that, honestly speaking, we deliver on this? This is very important, especially that we are always saying we have got many people who are not employed. It helps our people to put bread on the table. What are we going to be doing going forward?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the department for your presentation. Chairperson, I want to link with what my colleague said. Everywhere, yeah, I'm mentioning they couldn't find service providers in time. Now that has a knock-on effect. We must look back. Before finding a service provider, there must be something that we call planning. And I want to leave the question here to the DG. When planning, we must look at certain factors, such as timing. And with timing, I mean, can there be a project over more than 1 year? Because some of these projects lend it to a longer time than just 1 year. And Chairperson, stakeholders, service providers are also stakeholders. You should foresee that there might be a delay when engaging with stakeholders. Are you, when you plan, looking at the SMART principles? Underspending, overspending. Please look at that. You have, in I think in program 3 or 4, you have tourism monitors. What is the impact of the tourism monitors? And you know, Chairperson, I talked about it yesterday. This training of the unemployed youth for sommelier training, are they all, when they are trained, do they get are they absorbed by the market? And there are reasons for dropouts. Now, one of these reasons is pregnancy. Now, I don't know how the scope of a sommelier program looks like, but pregnancy is something, it's a natural thing. And if you have sommelier programs yearly, how long is it? If it's yearly, do you absorb the women, the young women, that drop out due to their
due to pregnancy in the next training course. Because I know, for example, I heard about the police recruiting youngsters, and when they fall out in, say, in physical training, they will be absorbed in the next training. So I thought, why would we not do the same if a girl child falls out and give her a second opportunity? For me, it is the human factor. We must praise that girl. Chairperson, I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apologies for getting in late. I lost venue. Maybe it's just that it's the last year of our term. Chair, let me start from where Honorable Adams has led. I appreciate that we are given the third quarter performance report. But where we are given a reason that some of the EPW recruits pull out of the program because some lose interest, you are tempted to ask, are they sign contracts there, they do whatever, they are recruited through programs and whatever, but are they paid on time? Because sometimes those are unemployed people, they have to travel, they have to do whatever. Is the department playing its role in trying to make sure that they are remunerated on time so that they don't just lose interest? Because when you recruit one, we are trying to address something with that program. So we must encourage you to make sure that they are paid on time, because others are just human errors. You can't avoid. We must multiply. As women, we must do whatever, we must get permanent employment, that's good. But when a person just loses interest, that must create something in your mind. I was also to suggest that there is this program that was targeting women in tourism. Can the one that did not take place because it was towards December, can we have those provincial ones as big gaps for August month? Can we have, so that you have the main event in during the August month where women are all up in arms wanting to know what is it for them in government, by government. And also, I heard one of the presenters talking about a stakeholder meeting that was held in the Eastern Cape. I want to suggest that, because you create awareness. For you not to have the continuous problem of not getting service providers, it means at the beginning of the financial year, you must have this stakeholders information day so that you make them aware. So that they are ready when you need a service provider for a particular service, you make them ready. I was also interested in understanding where you were saying you were unable to get a service provider just for the development of a database for black-owned products and services. I want to say sometimes it's wise to name, but not to shame, but just to name the problems where you did not get it, so that we are able also to play our role as politicians when we are there to say, there's this in tourism, there are these opportunities. There's also another work we are doing as politicians in our constituencies. It is also wise if you can name them to say, it is in this province where we did not get a particular service provider for this particular service that we wanted. I think, Chair, the structure of the report is good. It's unfortunate that we won't get your fourth quarter performance, but we hope that if you are at 73 now, at least you may be at 90 something by the photo. It's unfortunate that our time has lapsed. It may be our last engagement with you, but we thank you very much. Thanks,
honorable members. I would also want to just have one comment and a question. It's to emphasize on the issue of the program on women in tourism annual gathering, because I've heard the reasons to say it's linked with the DM's calendar, and you then held it in January, but then it loses its significance, you know, when you and the impact that women really do play in tourism. Perhaps you should ensure that it falls within the Women's Month or in the Tourism Month, because August and September are just months that follow each other, so that people can get to appreciate the work that women are doing in during that month. Because in January, really, people are interested in fees must fall, you know, and fees must fall, kids must go to school. And whether they are falling or they're not falling. So, even media at that time is not interested in what women are doing at that time. So we must also just look at the calendar there, ensure that the executive that must be there during these 2 months is held within the month, of either August month or in the September during the tourism month activities. And then I then have a serious confusion when it comes to the incubators. I'm now DG, I'm now losing the track on understanding whether we have the 3 incubators or we have 1 incubator, and whether the other provinces will have incubators, or we are moving to the virtual incubator, whether there are services. You know, I'm really, really, really getting confused, because what as I'm following the way incubators were set up in the first place to assist SMMEs within the spaces to ensure that they get the support. You know, an incubator by its name says it's something that should be ensuring that this SMME grows, giving it the requested skills and expertise and also tools of trade to a certain extent to be able to be job creators, you know, and to be at least owners and so on. But you constantly throughout your incubator program reported on 4 incubators. Now you have 1, and then the other 3, I don't know whether there are challenges or whether they are in place, and then you are telling us now you're waiting for service providers. And then there's also something that which I heard that talks about virtual incubators, to say you're no longer going to be having physical incubators where you have initially earmarked to have those incubators. Initially, I've also heard that you're going to roll out the incubators in each and every province. Now, I'm hearing something else. Perhaps assist me so that we close Parliament knowing really what's with the incubator program within the Department of Tourism.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will hand over to the DDGs. Then I'll come back if they think they didn't cover. But I want to speak also on behalf of the men in the department to say we agree that it should be during August, and we've been advising that it should be during August. Let's start with Osmo. I think you've got more questions. Then we'll come back to Shamila, and then we'll go to Annie.
Thank you, Chairperson, thank you, DG. I'll start with the very last one, the issue of the incubator. When we conceptualize the incubator, in terms of the nature of the sector, it becomes very difficult to remove the owners from their businesses to come and congregate at a particular point, like for the, let's say for SADS, what they normally do in their incubation, they move them to the site, for plus minus, let's say 2 weeks, and then go back. But in terms of this sector, it becomes very difficult to really get out of your business and be somewhere for a week to be incubated. So even right from the beginning, we preferred the virtual. But it happened that the service provider that we got to do the work for us in Murulane felt that they need an office where, on a day-to-day, if they want to access the Wi-Fi, if they want to access whatever, and even for physical interaction, they have a space where they can be to be able to go to that space, which in a way it worked very well for the Murulane, the Bilansberg incubator. We have 4 incubators, one being the Murulane, which is now wrapping up end of the next financial year. The 3, which is Palaburon, Bushbuck Ridge, and Mir. We've been giving support internally, plus CEDA, in terms of the needs that they said they want us to support them on. We are now going to have service providers to really handhold them on a regular basis going forward for those 1,000 days that we said an enterprise becomes sustainable if he or she is incubated within those number of days. So we have 4. Going forward, we worked on the enterprise development framework in terms to have that long-term guidance on it. Then the virtual thing came in because we felt it's going to be very difficult to, let's say, initiate one. By the time we reach the 9th province, it will be I don't know how many years down the line. Mm-hmm. So it would be good that we have virtual. And this virtual will help us to support countrywide, let's say 4 operators. Then they will be incubated in that manner. And for that to happen, we'll have to do things electronically, but it doesn't exclude the physical interaction that is needed. Hence, we refer to it as being virtual. It will give us more, can I say, feet in terms of covering quite a lot of people rather than having the hub. With the 4 that we have, the first issue was, where is the hub? Let's say Sun City, let's say Kruger Park. But with the virtual, it's more of allowing you to be able, especially the tour operator, to understand the space you are in, and we're giving them support through our own programs like the social tourism that we have. The very pilot that we're doing currently, we're using imaging tour operators. So it's part of moving them towards incubating them. On the issue of dropouts, but with special focus for our female learners who become pregnant. Do we give them the second chance? To be honest, in terms of the second chance, we don't know if they do come back. We haven't even done that analysis. But what we normally do is to give everybody a chance. But to focus, okay, this one has fallen off the road. Once the child has grown up, can we bring them back? I don't think it's something that we can close off. But we didn't give them special focus to say, how do we pick them up after they've gone out of the program? the loss of interest is not a question of not being paid on time, because we do monitor, because the figures that the FTEs that we refer to are based on being able to have paid them that stipend. So the loss of interest is something that we cannot say is due to not being paid, but it will tie up well with the absenteeism. Normally those who absent themselves quite a lot, normally we don't pay for people who are absent, because the main issue is for you to work and be able to get a stipend. Maybe they are somehow interested. I think the issue of food and tourism, the advice is taken on board. And what we have noticed is that over the years, there's been the months moving away from the tourism month. But the provincial chapters, what they normally do during August month, they come up with activities that we do support. The tourism monitors, what's the impact? It's an area that we started piloting with housing. The impact is still to be seen, but for now, the outcome that we'd like to see is for our young people to be able to give information to tourists, be able to serve as ambassadors within the sector, and give tourists that sense of feeling safe in terms of the attractions that they visit. The executive development for women, we started first with 20, and then we did 40 in this current financial year, and we have started with the 20 now in February as the intake for 2019-20. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, honourable members. I think that the key question has been around procurement and how we plan on dealing with the challenges going forward. I think that what we have now done in the department is that we've had a team that has spent, I think, probably a month on adjudicating for panels. So what we are doing is we are setting up panels of pre-qualified service providers, which will be in place for our skills development program next year. And also we are setting up a panel that looks at built environment professionals, so that can attend to the issues around our infrastructure projects. What that will enable us to do moving forward is that we wouldn't then have to go out on an open tender every time we have a skills development program. We would then put that work out to the pre-qualified panel that is in place. So that will make our process a little bit shorter in procurement moving forward, because we have had the challenge. So we've gone through a very extensive process. I think our team has spent probably about 6 weeks in the adjudication process. We got lots of skills providers that actually been in the process to actually pre-qualify them, to make sure that they meet the criteria upfront, so that now when we put out the work, we're not having to do that process, because it's a very involved process. It involves not just their submissions, but it also involves site visits to check that they in fact exist, to check their premises, to check the conditions of training of each of the sites for every single tender. And it's unfortunate that we haven't been able to appoint, but it would be irresponsible to appoint service providers who we know can't deliver. So I think that will now help us with the process going forward. It doesn't help us with where we are at the current point in time, but it is hard lessons that you learn in order to progress going forward. With regard to the spend, I think the spending then will also become challenges around spending are, of course, linked to being able to make the appointments. So that will also then become a thing of the past, because we will be able to appoint faster and we will be able to implement quicker. So I think that really is our concrete solution going forward. On the ones, the two that we've spoken to already, we couldn't have anticipated having to advertise one of them three times. We couldn't have anticipated having the challenges that we had on the second one. I think I'm going to leave it at that.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. There was one question related to our data collection project in terms of the service providers, the one that Shamila just referred to. We've managed to appoint two service providers, and they will manage the data collection in the Eastern Cape, the Free State, and the Northern Cape. So it's for the other outstanding six provinces that we've then re-advertised, and the process closed, and we are now adjudicating to see if we have received suitable candidates from those provinces. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I think all the questions have been answered. We acknowledge, Honourable Chairperson, that all these challenges that we're experiencing, they do have an impact on service delivery. That is for sure. But we are seized with it. Even in our discussions in terms of performance review of the different quarters with the political principals, they assist with these matters. So we make sure that all of us are doing what we have to do. If you listen to the DDGs, you can hear they are fully aware of what exactly are the challenges, which it does give me a bit of comfort. But like we said, there are those instances which unfortunately they become a little bit too many, which the control that we have is limited. In some instances, we've got procurement that is prescribed by statute that it should not be done by us. So some of the things that were said with regards to some of the services, particularly in the corporate environment, would be within that particular category. So it does come in. And then there's a question that relates to how are we going to deal with issues of making sure that in future we've got EPWP achieving what it is meant to achieve. The outcomes of the job summit, there were two specific outcomes that have got some relationship with what we do. One was a mentorship program which we are going to run together with the industry. The second one was infrastructure maintenance program that we're going to run with the national parks. And I'm broadly using the word national parks because it's not going to be just the Sand Parks ones. There will be work that we'll do with Isimamaliso as an example. There will be work that we'll do with other parks as well. But in terms of the ones that are Sand Parks, obviously they would be the most in terms of numbers. The planning for that is concluded at this stage. So 1st of April, we'll be starting with the implementation. So we're talking about something that's going to be happening across the country. So that's big, which we'll be able to deal with the numbers. The issues that Shamila spoke to with regards to making sure that we start with the panels in place, that also is going to assist in that when we want to then procure, we are ready. We'll be able to then get into that procurement process. There are a few things that I thought we should just bring to the attention of the members. The Charter Council term comes to an end soon. We've already started with the recruitment process. Whilst we do know that we anticipate that there's going to be a reorganization of government, we believe that since the Charter Council is a statutory body, it would still be there because that law would still So that process is starting. We are also looking at where will the home be, so that we can really have a degree of independence. They should be able to come to me and say, what are the things that we are doing as the department. But equally, they must be able to go to TPCSA and say, what are they doing as industry. So it should not be such that we have that too intimate a relationship, such that there's no clarity as to are they in the department, are they outside the department. So that we are definitely going to be dealing with. The elephant in the room obviously would be the bill. We didn't say anything about it, and I think we need to say something about it without pronouncing on what the policy that cabinet would ultimately approve will be, but it is in the cabinet process as we speak. So we anticipate that if all goes well, it will be out for public comment in March. The initial public comment that we should go through. Those were the main issues that we wanted to raise. The dropout issue is a difficult one. We try to sort of like look at a benchmark of what is the dropout rate in other programs, but not necessarily learnerships and so, but programs such as, so if you take a university student, public information, current public information suggests that just under 40% students who are doing 3-year degree complete within schedule. Then there's another percentage that would push that maybe to closer to 45 to 50% that would complete within twice that amount of time that is scheduled. And then you've got some who would go as up to 10 years, and these are people that would be largely coming from a previously disadvantaged background. So this, the social context within which we are implementing these programs does matter. I remember a story of one of the graduates, I think it was in the van, who was narrating his story to say that I've come out of a Nyaope infested environment, and I braved everything to complete this program. So there are those societal issues that somewhat are also a factor in this. And I'm raising this because at the end of the day, I think there is some role that society has to play as well. Because it's an opportunity. The absorption rate with the chefs and so on is very good. And when there are those opportunities, but then you still see these levels of dropout, which are quite small comparative to the bigger dropouts, even like grade 1 to grade 12, the dropouts there are huge. Far less than 50% of people who go into the system actually complete matric. So these are issues which are probably much broader and would be attended to as we go, but we will continue to avail these opportunities to ensure that at least we make our contribution to the reduction of poverty. Thank you.
Thank you, Dichi and your team. You are welcome, Honorable Kronborg. We always appreciate having you. We were looking into the report of the two quarters of the performance of the department, and up to quarter three, the department is sitting at 73% of their performance targets. And this gives us hope and assurance that they are well on track to be able to perform optimally by the end of quarter four. DG, whilst appreciating your closing remarks, you've touched on the issue of the Tourism Charter Council, its secretariat and its house. But I did not get you properly. We want to get an assurance that the Charter Council will be housed where it is going to operate independently from the department. I've heard you speaking, but I think you're speaking in tongues.
I'm just thinking about all these things that are going on in the when you talk of speaking in time.
And then I think of the dead men.
We want it to be independent. We really want it to be independent. At the moment, it's more difficult for us than for the council, because what would appear in the plans of the council essentially is what is coming out of the plans of the department, which is what government wants to do for transformation of the sector. So the council must be independent, it must have its own plans. And the law says it must be funded, co-funded by government and business. So that's what we are working on. I've had discussions with the current chairperson and the deputy. Fortunately, the deputy chairperson happens to be the chairperson of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. So we are all aligned, and our recommendation is a joint recommendation, basically, in that regard. And yes, we want it to be independent from our side.
Okay. Further to that, wanting to be independent, because remember, we have been saying this, house it in a space that would, so that they would be able to look at you from an outside perspective, so that they hold you accountable in terms of what you are supposed, the role that you're supposed to play in ensuring that you create the space and the environment that is regulated to ensure that tourism does, there is transformation. Because we have been saying there is lack of transformation in the sector. And some of the issues, well, it's not your issues, but the mere fact that they are housed, the secretariat is housed within yourself, it's they're not able to independently even criticize what you are not doing, or how, or the support that you are not giving towards the this mammoth task of transformation. Because it's one thing for us to be saying transformation must happen, we must start having deliverables on transformation. You know, well, I'm hopeful that what you want and what business want will actually happen, that the council will the secretariat will be housed independently outside entity to be able to work with you and work independently. And we also welcome the fact that in March the draft bill will come out for public comment. We have vested interest in it, you know, to see what we as the portfolio committee, all our work for the fifth parliament, you know, all the hard work that we've put into towards ensuring that the bill is amended to a certain degree that reflects how we all see tourism being regulated in South Africa. You know, I want to believe that we all have a common agenda when it comes to the bill, honourable members. with these few words, allow me to appreciate the work that is done. It's noticed, DG, and your DDGs and Team Tourism. We have noticed the selling and the hard work that you've put into, while also noticing your shortfalls, where you are not able to, in, with aspects to issues of project management, and that has to do with forward planning. It has gone into our legacy report, and we believe that the next set of honourable members would be taking over from us, would be taking over the baton from us, will be able to ensure that they keep you on your toes so that you are able to forward plan and ensure that your project management capacity within the department is capacitated to a point where there aren't so many delays. Well, we know that the future is not always certain. There will be degrees of uncertainty where you would have planned for this and things would turn out not to be what you planned for. And as human beings, we do allow that because we are operating in a place where there are human beings. And human beings do not all conform and in fact, we are saying they don't flow like a river, you know, that goes down the valley or towards the sea. So there are bound to be some hiccups and turbulences along the way. But we do appreciate the work, and with these few words, honourable members, I would like to thank everyone, and the meeting is adjourned. Mr. Monavis will just take us through. There is a slight change in our program on the 2 weeks, on the 13th and on the 20th. So we had planned for something else, and it looks as if those 2 days would be open. So, but I would ask you to speak to it.
Thanks, Chair. Let's speak, honourable members, on the 6th. Then we will be meeting with the SAT on their quarter 2 and quarter 3. After that, the expectation was we were supposed to deal with the. We're supposed to deal with the annual performance plans, honourable members, for the 13th and the 20th. Now it seems that the view from Parliament is that those issues must be.